ब्रह्मार्यभ्यो ब्रह्मविद्यासम्प्रदायकर्तृभ्यो वंशर्षिभ्यो महद्भ्यो नमो गुरुभ्यः नारायणं पद्मभुवं वसिष्ठं शक्तिं च तत्पुत्रपराशरं च व्यासं शुकं गौरपरं च महान्तं गोविन्दयोगीन्द्रमथास्य शिष्यं श्रीशङ्कराचार्यमथास्य पद्मभारं च हस्तामलकं च शिष्यं तं धोतकं वार्तिककारमन्यान् अस्मद्गुरुन् सन्ततमानतोऽस्मि नमः श्रीशङ्करानन्द गुरुपाराम्बुजन्मने सविलासमहामोह ग्राहक्रासैककर्मणे. Good. Welcome back. We continue our study of Panchadashi, 7th chapter. And before we plunge into the next sequence of verses, I think it's helpful at the beginning of a class, especially with a very difficult subject matter. I won't say difficult. Very detailed. It's not difficult. You've handled much more difficult stuff. When you were in college, I guarantee you what you were studying was more complicated. But what we are seeing here are some very important distinctions or details. We want to make sure that we have those details correctly in our minds. So let me just summarize the really big picture. We can say the pursuit of Vedanta falls into three stages. One is a stage of preparation, in which we gain adhikaritvam. Adhikaritvam means preparedness. Notice that throughout our classes on Panchadashi, we haven't discussed it at all. And we haven't discussed it because it's an introductory topic, and this is not an introductory text or chapter, nor is this an introductory class. By the way, I think next year we will do a more introductory kind of text, but our choice for this year is to do a fairly sophisticated study, which will continue. What we've been talking about quite extensively is the second and third stages. The second stage is the stage in which you gain jnana. Jnana means atmajnana, means discovery of your true nature as being non-separate from Brahman. And that jnanam is attained through Mahavakya, as we've discussed quite extensively, together with vichara, inquiry. So remember the tenth man story, being told you are the one you're looking for, that represents the Mahavakya. So gaining of knowledge takes place due to the Mahavakya. Then what is the third stage? And that's what our discussion for the last two, 3 weeks has been, the third stage, which is gaining, there are two terms. The term Vidyaranya Swami uses is jnana dardhya. Little hard to pronounce even, dardhya. A more common expression is jnana nishtha. Jnana dardhya literally means firmness. Nishtha means almost the same thing, being firmly established. So jnana dardhya or jnana nishtha is the third stage that we've been talking most extensively about. And we said that the means for jnana dardhya and jnana nishtha are threefold. This has been our discussion for some time. Shravana, manana, and nididhyasana. So shravana is to remove any vagueness you have about the scriptures, which would be an obstacle to firmness of knowledge. Obviously, even though you've understood the Mahavakya, if you are unclear, by the way, just to make a connection to our last class, the Mahavakya, Shravana means an inquiry into the scriptures. Where did the Mahavakya occur? In the scriptures. Where does this vichara take place? With the help of the scriptures. So definitely we can say that this is all in one basket, so to speak. Vidyaranya likes to make a sharp dividing line right here. Most authors don't. Most authors would blur the line between Mahavakya and Shravana, since Mahavakya is found in the scriptures. So we discussed it at length in our last class. I won't go further into it right now. So after the Mahavakya has given you knowledge, at first that knowledge was not firm. And if it's not firm, you are deprived the jnana phala. Actually, I'm going to hold off on that. We're going to come to that a little bit later in this class. The distinction between jnana and jnana phala. Jnana phala means the fruits of knowledge. We'll talk about that more, not right now, a little later with one of the verses. So just to finish this summary. Knowledge takes place, discovery of your true nature. When I say knowledge takes place, this isn't like gaining knowledge of when World War II occurred. That's, as far as we're concerned, that's not knowledge at all. We call that information. And information for a spiritual student is useless. Might be useful if you need to know about World War II, or if you're in a kitchen, knowing a recipe might be useful. But if you want moksha, information of all kinds is not useful. So when we say knowledge, we mean it in a very specific sense, the personal, immediate discovery of your true nature as Satchidananda. That's what we mean by knowledge. That takes place due to the Mahavakya, but as we just said, at first, that knowledge will be obstructed by three kinds of problems. One kind of problem is lack of clarity about what the scripture teaches. Remember the expression pramana asambhavana. I'm choosing not to write these words up on the board. It's intimidating. So I'm just going to drop those words for today. So lack of clarity about what the scriptures teach is an obstacle to clarity of this knowledge, to firmness of this knowledge. So Shravana is a process of removing any doubts or confusion about what the scripture teaches. Next step is you might have doubts or confusion about you. Shravana deals with doubts or confusions about the scriptures. Manana deals with doubts and confusion about your true nature. What is the relationship between consciousness and your body? What is the relationship between consciousness and your mind? What is your mind? What are thoughts? These are all very important questions which have to be dealt with thoroughly, and those doubts and questions are dealt with through the process of manana. So Shravana removes any doubts or obstacles which are born of the scriptures. Manana removes any doubts or obstacles focused on you. And then Nididhyasana, this is going to be our topic for tonight, Nididhyasana removes, the term I've been using again and again, habitual wrong thinking. Remember in the last class I gave that lovely lion story. So that lion, even after discovering he's a lion, he continues to think he's one of the lambs. So habitual wrong thinking, and we're going to use the technical term for that, which is viparita bhavana. Bhavana means a feeling which is viparita, which is contrary to your true nature. Which means, having discovered that you are consciousness utterly independent of your body, you might still feel that this is me. Or having understood that the world is a projection of Ishvara and is not absolutely real, doesn't share the absolute reality of Brahman, you might continue to think that's real. So these are two examples of viparita bhavana, and that's what we're going to return to right now in the next verse. resume with verse 1:11. Atma deha dibhinno yam atma deha mithya chedam jagatayoh mithya deha dhyatmatva satyatva deha dhyatmatva satya dhirviparyaya bhavana dhirviparyaya bhavana. Start at the end. Viparyaya bhavana. Viparyaya means error, means the same as viparita. Viparyaya bhavana is a synonym for viparita bhavana. There's no shade of difference. It's just a different word. So viparyaya means error. So a bhavana, a feeling based on error. That means, suppose you've, as we said before, you've discovered that you are pure consciousness, but you feel like your body is me. That is viparyaya bhavana. And what is the nature of it? It is twofold, and we've seen this once before, that viparyaya bhavana or viparita bhavana has two main categories. One category is dehadi atmatva, deha adi, adi etc., body etc., atmatva. Atmatva means taking it as yourself. Dehadi atmatva, taking your body, mind, and senses to be you. This is me. Why is this me? It feels like me. Why is the chair not me? It doesn't feel like me. Turns out that's quite arbitrary, but that's how we feel. Feeling means bhavana. So this is one of two main kinds of viparita bhavana, is dehari atmatva, taking your body, mind, and senses to be me. Mind includes emotions. So, and just to make this very clear, when sadness arises in your mind, when you say, I am sad, one of two things have taken place. Either you never made it to step two, jnanam, or you did make it to step two, but something's missing in step three, because if you say, I am sad, the sadness belongs to your mind, not to you. So why are you identified with your mind? That is deha adi, etc. So body, mind. Mind includes emotions. So to identify with your mind, your emotions, as an example of the first of the two kinds of categories, first of the two categories of viparita bhavana. The second category is, it's abbreviated here. It says satyatva. There's a word that's been skipped because it didn't fit in the line. Remember, these lines are limited to 16 syllables in a line, so sometimes words don't fit. And an author will occasionally leave out the word, figuring out, assuming that you're smart enough to figure it out. You better be. Anyway, so the word that's left out is jagat. Jagat satyatva. And this describes the second of the two categories of viparita bhavana. Jagat, world, satyatva, status of being real, the reality of the world. Let me just summarize that for you. The two kinds of viparita bhavana, as identified by this verse, one is, I'm going to put it in English. Body, etc., equals atma. The feeling that the body, etc., is me, is the first of these two kinds of viparita bhavana. And the second is taking the world as absolutely real. You might wonder, why is that such a big problem if the world is real? If the world is real, you better be careful. It can threaten you. If the world is real, it can hurt you. Can threaten you. That's the difference between in a dream, whatever happens in a dream, can it hurt you? In a dream, you can die again and again and again. You still wake up. Whatever happens in a dream can't threaten you because it's not as real as you are. In the same way, whatever happens in the world won't threaten you if you know it's not as real as you are. We don't say it's illusion, but we do say it's not as real as you are.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that. So these are the two basic categories of viparita bhavana. What is the significance? They are obstacles to firmness of knowledge. That's the third category that we're talking about here. So in the end, he identifies these two, dhihi. Dhihi means understanding, perspectives. So what are the two perspectives? Dehadi, atmatva, taking the body, mind, senses, etc. as being oneself. And jagat satyatva, including that extra word, taking the world as being real. These two dhihi perspectives are what? Viparyaya bhavana. These are the two categories of viparita bhavana, of habitual wrong thinking that will rob you of firmness of knowledge. Then, what is the issue? And now we can make a connection to the first part. Tayoho, for these two, leading question, why are these two considered viparyaya, error? And it says in the first half, because tayoho, for both of these, both what? Taking the body as you and taking the world as being absolutely real, tayoho, for both of these, there's a mistake. What is the mistake? He says, atma dehadi bhinnaha ayam. Ayam atma, this self. The self means not some idea or concept. This self means the consciousness because of which you know what's happening right now. That's the best definition of atma. What is the most fundamental definition of atma? The conscious being who knows what's happening right now. That's our definition of atma. What about that atma? Ayam atma, this atma is deha adi bhinnaha. This atma is bhinnaha, separate, distinct from the deha adi, from the body, etc. Atma is distinct from the body, mind, and senses. But due to viparyaya bhavana, due to this habitual wrong thinking, you get the feeling that the body is you, body, etc. And secondly, it says mityam, mitya cha, and idam jagat, this world, is mitya. Mitya we use in Vedanta as a technical word. You can't just translate it as false because you won't get the right meaning at all. The technical meaning of mitya in Vedanta is that which has dependent existence. That which doesn't have independent existence, that which has dependent existence. The example we use again and again is a clay pot. In the example of the clay pot, the pot depends on the clay for its existence. Does the clay depend on pot? Not at all. So therefore, in that example, we would say, relatively speaking, the clay is satyam, because the clay doesn't depend on anything for its existence. But in that example, the pot is considered mitya. Why? The pot depends on the clay for its existence. So when we say the world is mitya, as this verse says, idam jagat, this world, mitya. It doesn't say illusion. Mithya does not mean illusion. And Advaita Vedanta does not teach that the world is an illusion. Is a pot an illusion? Can an illusory pot hold water? You get the point. So please, I'm making a little bit of an issue here because you've heard that word illusion too many times. I bet many of you have heard that word illusion more than a few times, and it will distort your thinking. It'll prevent you from understanding Advaita Vedanta properly. Please remove that translation illusion from your memory banks. It will only cause difficulty. The definition of mithya is that which has dependent existence. The significance of it is this. That which has dependent existence isn't as real as that which has independent existence. Can the pot do anything to the clay? If the pot breaks, what happens to the clay? Nothing. That's a point I made just a few minutes ago. If the world is real, watch out. But if the world is not as real as you are, let the world do what it will. What can we do? We can't control the world. We can discover that whatever happens in the world doesn't truly affect us. That is jagat mithyatva. So the second half of this verse talks about the two kinds of erroneous habitual thinking. The first part of the verse gives us the correct thinking. What is the correct thinking? That Atma is utterly independent of the body, mind, and senses, and this world is not as real as you are. Consciousness has independent existence, satyam. The world does not have independent existence. It is mithya. Therefore, just as the crack of the pot can't affect the clay, just as whatever happens in a dream doesn't really affect you because the dream world is not as real as you are, in the same way, whatever happens in this world doesn't truly affect you. You need not be afraid of it. All right. So having defined in verse 111 what is the problem of viparita bhavana, this twofold problem, what is the solution to the problem? We find in the next verse. The solution is for the sake of firmness of knowledge. This is still talking about our step three here, gaining jnana dardhya, firmness of knowledge, or jnana nishta. Tattva bhavana ya nashyet, tattva bhavana sato dehati riktatam, sato dehati rikta atmano bhavaye tadvata, atmano bhavaye tadvata. Mithyatvam jagato nisham, mithyatvam jagato nisham. So how do you get rid of viparita bhavana? We'll skip that viparyaya bhavana because it's not the most common expression. The more common expression is viparita bhavana, habitual wrong thinking, how to get rid of it. See that sato is actually sa ataha. Sa is a pronoun talking about viparita bhavana. That viparita bhavana, nashyet, should be destroyed, can be destroyed. How? Tattva bhavanaya, by means of reflection on the truth. Not viparita bhavana came before. Notice the word here is tattva bhavana. Viparita bhavana is a feeling opposed to reality. Tattva bhavana is a feeling conforming to reality. This is the essence of the verse. So viparita bhavana is when your feelings don't conform to reality. Tattva bhavana is a feeling that conforms to reality. So by cultivating, notice here, the problem is a habitual feeling or impression in our mind. If the problem is a habitual feeling, if we call the problem a feeling, and when I say feeling, not in the same sense as emotion, sometimes we use the word feeling for emotion, but this is more in a more general sense, feeling in a sense. If you have the sense that the body is me, that's viparita bhavana, how to get rid of that sense, how to get rid of that habitual feeling that the body is me, well, why not meditate on its opposite, which is meditate on the fact that the body is a thing like the chair. What is the difference? The only difference is nerves are in my leg, nerves are not in my chair. If there were no nerves in my leg, could I tell the difference between the chair and my leg? Isn't it a little bit arbitrary? You get the point? Wherever your nerves are, you are there. Huh? Does that make sense? That means if your nerves are destroyed, you cease to exist there? But notice that's the sense we have. There's sensation in my leg. There's no sensation in the chair. So I wrongly conclude that the leg is me, that the chair is not me, and it's just wrong thinking, completely wrong thinking. The only reason the leg feels different than the chair is the arbitrary presence of nerves. Pretty arbitrary. So, how to get rid of this habitual feeling by its contrary. This is a part of a principle we've talked about before. It's pratipaksha bhavana, meditating on the opposite. A good way to get rid of like bad habits. Suppose, let me just be a little bit more general here. Suppose you're not very generous. How to become more generous? Give more money. Make yourself do it, even if you're not inclined to. The act of doing the opposite, the act of being generous, removes the conditioning of being stingy. Let us use the word. How to get rid of stinginess? By the act of being generous. You're following me? That's the principle of viparita bhavana, by doing the opposite. Puja Swami Dayananda, you would use the a great example. Suppose you hate someone. That's a very strong word, but suppose you hate someone. So his advice was, if you hate that person, what you do is, for 40 days in a row, you do a loving act towards that person. What is a loving act? You give them a beautiful rose once a day for 40 days. So by doing that loving act 40 days in a row, you remove that feeling of hate. This is the principle that we're using here. So what will it take to remove the idea or sense that this body is me? I should contemplate the opposite, that the body is like the chair. In fact, this is a good example. Notice the chair is orange, my body looks orange. You know, one orange thing, the other orange thing, what is the difference? They're just things. By the way, there's a specific meditation we sometimes do, and that is to imagine your own body. And some of you remember when I've done this, what did I call it? Breathing statue meditation. We've done that here many times. That breathing statue meditation, some of you have been in the meditation sessions, you've heard me do that, helps you get the sense that the body is just another thing. So in order to get over the sense that the body is me, we have to do the opposite contemplation. And in the same way, to get rid of the sense that the world is absolutely real, we have to contemplate on the opposite of that. And that's exactly what the verse gives here. So it says, sa, and sa will connect to viparita bhavana, that habitual wrong thinking, nashyate, one should remove how? Tattva bhavanaya, by means of tattva bhavana. Viparita bhavana is removed by tattva bhavana. Do you follow the Sanskrit? Viparita bhavana is a feeling which is opposite to truth, and it is removed how? By tattva bhavana, a feeling which is in conformance with truth. Viparita bhavana is removed by tattva bhavana. How is that done? He gives some instructions here. He says, ataha, therefore, deha atirikta tam atmanah bhavayet. Bhavayet, one should meditate. Meditate on what? Atmanah, meditate on yourself being deha atirikta tam. Meditate on the in. The Sanskrit is literally atmanah, for atma, deha atiriktatam, the independence of atma from the body, mind, and senses. Bhavayet, you should meditate on the deha atiriktatam, on the independence of the body, mind, and senses. Its independence from atma. That we can say, that's not exactly what the Sanskrit says. I'm trying the way it's expressed in Sanskrit is a little bit clumsy, so I'm just making it a little bit simpler for you. So to remove the sense that the body is me, what should you do? Meditate, contemplate. We use the word nididhyasana for contemplation. Should perform a specific contemplation. What should you contemplate? On how your true self consciousness is independent of the body, mind, and senses. And then what about for the second problem, the problem of taking the world as being absolutely real and therefore threatening to you? So tadvat, in the same way as you contemplate atma being utterly independent of your mind, body and senses, tadvat, in the same way, you meditate on jagataha mithyatvam, on the mithyatva of the world. I'm just pausing here. What one English word is the best translation for mithya? Notice I've translated as that which has dependent reality. Can you give me one word in English that has that meaning? Dream is a projection, is an illusion. So anyway, I'm also asking rhetorical questions in this class. You'll get the hang of it. So think about this. That which has dependent existence, like the pot relative to the clay. We have no one English word that has exactly that meaning. It doesn't exist. So therefore, what should you do? Use the word mithya. It's perfect. Don't translate it. If you've got a good word, use it. The only thing, if we want to translate, this is a bad joke, get ready for it. If you want to translate mithya into English, the best you can do is this. Pronounce it with an English accent. Mithya. No, mithya. Mithya. Something like that. Anyway, it literally is untranslatable. It's a sophisticated concept, that which has dependent existence, not being absolutely real. So these are two forms of contemplation. What would the nature of that contemplation take? I'll just give you an example. There are many, many, many ways of doing both of these contemplations. I've given examples of the first one, atma being independent of your body, mind, senses. I gave the example of my leg and the chair. Let me give you one example of jagat mithyatva, the dependent reality of the world not being as real as you. And this is an example from science. This is something that they didn't understand 500 years ago when this text was written. Your hand is made up of atoms. And you learned in a science class that atoms are like 99.9999999% empty space. There's a tiny, tiny nucleus, and there's even tinier electrons spinning around, and in between, there's a lot of nothing. Atoms are basically a lot of nothing with a few little dots of matter. Your body is made of atoms. This chair is made of atoms. This is, my hand is almost empty space. This chair is almost entirely empty space. Why does it feel so solid? You really have to think about it. Science has a good example, good explanation. Some of you know this, right? The reason is the atoms in your hand, on the outside of the atoms are the electrons for your hand, and on the outside of the atoms in his chair are electrons. The electrons of your hand are negatively charged. The electrons of the chair are negatively charged. What happens when like charges come together? They repel. That's what's happening. Huh? That is the reality of what's happening. And what does that demonstrate? Not as real as you think. My gosh. Electrons are repelling each other. That's the truth. If you think your hand is solid and the chair is solid, you don't understand science, much less Vedanta. Okay, I just bring that up as an example of contemplation of jagat mithyatva, of the world not being totally real. That's the paraphrase. Okay. And when should you do these contemplations? Not surprisingly, the author says anisham, continually, which means don't have a break at all. You just go on all your waking hours meditating on this. Of course, the author of our text was a sannyasi, didn't have a family to take care of and a 9-to-5 job to attend to, so he could say anisham. How about more realistically, how much should these contemplations be done? Well, what are we trying to accomplish? Number 3, jnana dardhyam, firmness of knowledge. You should do these contemplations until your knowledge is firm. Make sense? That's all it is. Of course, when will your knowledge be totally firm? That's another issue. The mind being what it is. The mind holds on to habits. Remember, I think in the last class, I gave the example of the exponential curve. What will happen is that this viparita bhavana of the mind goes away gradually, like that exponential curve, which means for all practical intents and purposes, contemplation, nitya dhyasana, becomes a lifelong practice. That's what it is. Now, I hope you won't think, what? You mean I have to go on practicing this all my life? Oh my gosh. Wait a minute. To contemplate on your full, complete nature is really miserable? To contemplate on your fullness? To contemplate on the fact that you are utterly unaffected by anything and everything? Contemplation done properly is the most rewarding thing. To reflect on your true nature, Satchitananda Atma. So therefore, it's not like a burden. It's not like, a good example, it's not like exercise. You know you're supposed to exercise every day, and for many of us, it's not that pleasant. Fortunately, nitya dhyasana properly done is extraordinarily pleasant, so it's hardly a burden. Okay, that concludes that topic. Moving ahead, we actually have a question, an opposing point of view. I'm not sure in this class if I've mentioned the tradition called Purvapaksha and Siddhanta. I think I've mentioned it here. Purvapaksha is the opposing point of view. Siddhanta is our point of view, the prevailing point of view. And it's a common technique in texts and commentaries to intentionally introduce the opposing point of view. To introduce the opposing point of view is to introduce a Purvapaksha. And this verse, verse 113, introduces the Purvapaksha. The following verse, 114, gives us the response to the Purvapaksha, which is called Siddhanta. Okay, Let's see the opposing point of view. Kim mantra japa van murti, kim mantra japa dhyana vachatma bheda dhihi, dhyana vachatma jagan mityatva dhish chatra, jagan mityatva vyavartya syarutan yata, vyavartya syarutan. So how will we get rid of this viparita bhavana? Is that through contemplation, nididhyasana? What is this nididhyasana? Well, actually, before we let, we have to get part of the verse. What is it we're trying to get rid of? Look at the middle of the second line. Atma bheda dhihi. Bheda dhi means the conclusion of separateness of atma. To know the distinction of atma from your body, mind, and senses, that is atma bheda dhi. That's one of the two kinds of contemplation, right? To contemplate your independence from your body, mind, and senses. Here it's called atma bheda dhi. What is the second part of the contemplation? Jagat mityatva dhihi. Is dhihi. Here, dhihi really means a meditation. To meditate on the mityatva of jagat. To meditate on the world having dependent reality. These are the two kinds of contemplation to be done. One kind of contemplation is atma bheda dhi, to contemplate the independence from your body, mind, and senses of your consciousness utterly independent of body, mind, and senses. Second kind of contemplation, jagat mityatva dhi, to contemplate the fact that the world is not as real as you. The world is mitya. And vyavyartya syat. You have to bring a word from... I'll bore you for just 2 minutes of boring Sanskrit. There's a tradition. You know, these verses are very condensed. You only get 32 syllables in a verse to work with. There's a tradition that's found in the sutra literature of borrowing a word from the prior verse. So if you're in fact, in the previous verse, we borrowed a word from the prior verse. What was that word? Viparita bhavana. So from verse 112, we've borrowed the word, actually, viparita bhavana, from verse 111. And guess what? In verse 113, we're still borrowing the same word from two verses back. By the way, this is why you have to study some... Sanskrit properly before you can really understand this. And also the commentaries. And of course, we study with the commentaries, and the commentaries will make these details clear. So anyway, I'm talking about all this boring Sanskrit stuff to explain the word vyavartya, the removal. The removal of what? The removal of viparita bhavana is done in its twofold manner, which we've already discussed. So as we said, the vyavartya, the removal of viparita bhavana, is done in a twofold way. How? By contemplating the independence of your consciousness from body, mind, and senses. And secondly, by contemplating the mityatva of the world. Okay, that's the connection. Now, what is the opposing point of view? What is the objection being raised in this verse? He says, how is it done? Kim, is it done? Mantra japavat. Is it done like the repetition of a mantra? We're talking about nididhyasana, contemplation. What is the difference between nididhyasana and dhyana? Dhyana means meditation. Nididhyasana means contemplation. These words are not synonyms. What is the difference? Mantra japa is a common form of dhyana. So is this nididhyasana mantra japavat, is it like the repetition of a mantra that you do in a typical kind of dhyana? There are other kinds of dhyana. Another famous kind of dhyana is murti dhyana, contemplation on a particular form of God. These are two kinds of dhyana. One kind of dhyana is mantra japa, meditate on your mantra. Another kind of dhyana is murti dhyana, concentrate on a form of Ishvara. So these are two common types of dhyana, and the objector is saying, is the practice of nididhyasana, is it syat, is it the same as dhyana? Is nididhyasana the same as reciting a mantra, the same as concentrating on a form, uta, or is it anyata, is it different than reciting a mantra? Is it different than dhyana? Is nididhyasana the same as dhyana, or is nididhyasana different than dhyana? And before we proceed, we need to understand a little bit, what is dhyana? So we've been talking only about nididhyasana now. Let's talk a little bit about dhyana to make the context clear. Otherwise, the answer won't make sense if we don't set up the doubt or the objection properly. The use of dhyana in Vedanta is different than in mainstream Hinduism. The use of dhyana in meditation is part of step one, right? The use of dhyana in Vedanta is for preparation, is for adhikaritva. But when you read the Puranas, you'll find that dhyana is not done for the sake of adhikaritvam for Vedanta. Dhyana is done for the sake of sakshatkara, for the sake of experiencing God coming to you in physical form. Like Dhruva meditates until Narayana appears before him. This is a very common kind of Puranic story. To meditate for the sake of gaining a personal contact with Ishvara is, in the Puranas, the most common application of dhyana. Notice it's very different. In Vedanta, we consider dhyana important to prepare our minds for this rigorous spiritual inquiry. But in the Puranas and other scriptures, dhyana is done for the purpose of having this experience of a form of God. As I said, as Narayana appears before this young Dhruva as a result of his meditation, right? So how does that work? Well, you can either do mantra japa. You can go on reciting a mantra, Om Namo Narayana, as Dhruva did, Om Namo Narayanaya, Om Namo Narayanaya, Om Namo Narayanaya. You can do that until Lord Vishnu appears to you. That's one option. The other option is to do Murti Dhyana. What is that? Is you imagine Lord Narayana's form in your mind very vividly until he appears. So these are two forms of meditation. Now, what is the significance of this in comparing it to nididhyasana? Two things. One is, if you're going to do mantra japa, there are some rules that you have to follow. If you're going to do mantra japa for the sake of having Lord Narayana appear to you, you don't just start chanting Om Namo Narayanaya. There are some rules. For example, there are some prayers, in fact, especially in a ritual called Purushcharana, there's a very elaborate set of rituals you're supposed to do before you start chanting. Prayers and rituals which should technically be done before you even start chanting. There are other rules. Suppose you're doing your mantra japa with the help of a mala. Well, there are a bunch of more rules. Like, use your right hand. That's kind of an obvious one. A less obvious one is when you come to that Meru bead, the 109th bead, you're not supposed to cross that bead. You're supposed to turn the mala around and go back the way you came. You go over that bead, you've committed a great sin. And all of your effort is going to be down the drain. The point is, for doing mantra japa, there are a bunch of rules. Is that true of Nididhyasana? This is the objector's point. If you're going to do mantra japa, you have to follow rules. If you're going to do Nididhyasana, do you have to follow some rules? What are those rules? Also, look at this. The other example he gave was Murti Dhyana, to meditate on a form. Meditate on a form means you have to get it right. Is the chakra in the right hand and the shankha in the left, or is it the other way around? Well, you better get it right. If you meditate on the wrong form of Narayana, do you really think he's going to appear before you? And then there's two other hands. What are in the two other hands? One has a gada. Fine, right hand or left hand. The other hand can have different things. Sometimes it has a padma, sometimes it has a hand in a different position. Which form? What color? What kind of earrings? What kind of mala? All of these details. And you better get the details right, or your meditation will not be successful in causing Narayana to appear before you. This is the objector's perspective. Do you have the same restrictions applied to Nididhyasana? And there's one more issue. One issue is the rules and details. The second issue is this. When you start chanting Om Namo Narayanaya Om, or you imagine Lord Vishnu, do you get that sakshatkara? Sakshatkara means the appearance of the Lord's form before you. Does it happen immediately? No. It takes time. How long? It depends. Why does it take time? Why doesn't one Om Namo Narayanaya make Lord Vishnu appear before you? And the reason is, Lord Narayana's appearance before you is produced by the Adrishta Phala. Now, this all comes out of the commentary, so let me explain this. For every karma, there are two kinds of phala. Drishtapala, adrishtapala. If you've heard the doctrine of karma explained, you know this very well. Just to remind you, drishtapala is the immediate seen result of an action, is drishtapala. Adrishtapala is the kind of like the karmic, it's the deferred result, the result which will happen later. So, for example, when you chant Om Namo Narayanaya, it has drishtapala. It has an immediate effect. What is the immediate effect? Makes your mind quiet, right? When you chant a mantra, the immediate drishtapala of chanting a mantra is it makes your mind quiet and focused. What is the adrishtapala? The adrishtapala is when Narayana appears before you. Got it? But here's the thing. How much adrishtapala will it take to convince Lord Vishnu to appear in bodily form in front of you? Chanting it once, that mantra once, is not going to do it. It takes an accumulation of adrishtapala. A common translation of adrishtapala is grace. It's a workable translation. You have to accumulate a lot of grace before Lord Vishnu will appear before you in bodily form. It takes time. Is that also true of Nididhyasana? Do you have to do Nididhyasana for a long time and accumulate a lot of grace before you will finally remove these two kinds of viparita bhavana? Both of these positions are wrong and they'll be disproved in the next verse. But we need to understand what are the positions of the meditator, of the objector. So the objector says here, in summary, he says, is nididhyasana the same as chanting a mantra? If you're chanting a mantra, you have a lot of rules to follow. Or is it the same as meditating on a form? If you're meditating on a form, you have to get all the details right. And in either case, whether you're meditating on a form or chanting a mantra, it's going to take a long time to accumulate the grace for that result to take place. Is that how nididhyasana works? The short answer is nope. The long answer is verse 114. Anyate tivijanihi, anyate tivijan, drishtartatvena bhuktivata, drishtartatvena bhubukshur japavad bhunkte, bhubukshur japavad bhunk, nakashchan niyata kvachata, nakashchan niyata. So the prior verse, is it the same or is it anyata, different? Is it the same as japa and meditating on a form, or is it anyata, different? And what is the response? Anyata iti. It is different. Why is it anyata iti vijanihi? You should understand that nididhyasana is different from dhyana. It is different from meditating on a mantra. It is different from meditating on a form. Why? He says, drishtartatvena bhuktivat bhubhukshuhu. Great example. He says that it is drishtartatvena. Drishta means drishtapala. It is not adrishtapala. It is drishtapala. Notice we said, Lord Narayana appearing before you was the result of accumulated grace. Accumulated grace is adrishtapala. Nididhyasana is utterly unlike that, because we don't care about adrishtapala in nididhyasana. Nididhyasana creates drishtapala, an immediate effect. Just as meditation has the immediate effect of quieting your mind, in the same way, nididhyasana has the immediate effect of removing viparita bhavana. It's just psychology. If a habitual notion is in your mind, by addressing that habitual notion in your mind, it is removed. It's at the level of psychology. And he gives this nice example. It is like bhubhukshuhu, for someone who's hungry. For somebody who's hungry, notice, we have to get the metaphor right. If you're going to do the japa or meditate on the form, since the result comes through the adrishtapala, you have to accumulate a lot of grace before you get the desired effect. Are you with me? So since japa and since dhyana, the two kinds of dhyana we talked about, since the goal is achieved through the accumulation of grace, adrishtapala, it's going to take a while to accumulate enough grace. And he says, is it the same, bhubhukshuhu, for a hungry person who, bhuktivat, when that hungry person eats, do they have to eat a lot to accumulate adrishtapala to remove the hunger? Wait a minute. The result of eating is drishtapala. The result of eating is an immediate cessation of hunger. You don't have to accumulate grace. You don't have to, the only thing we accumulate is pounds. But you see the distinction the author wants to make is between drishtapala and adrishtapala. Adrishtapala means the accumulation of grace through any pious act, such as dhyana, pious meditation. So the first point he's making here is just as eating food, the result does not depend on adrishtapala, accumulation of grace, the result of eating food is immediate. It is drishtapala. Therefore, bubukshuhu muktivat, just as a hungry person's hunger is immediately quelled through the act of eating, through the drishtapala, in the same way, nididhyasana works, not through adrishtapala, not through the accumulation of grace, but it acts immediately and directly on the problem of viparita bhavana. So this is the first of his two points. There's a second one. Remember in the prior verse, the two points, one was it takes time. We just talked about this one. It takes time to accumulate grace for Lord Vishnu to appear before you. The other point you remember was if you're going to do japa, there are rules. And if you're going to meditate on the form of Ishvara, you have to know all the details. So do we have those same rules and details with regard to Nididhyasana? He says, na japavat bhungte kaschit niyataha kvachata. This japavat is actually a negative drishta. I'm going to bore you with all the Sanskrit. He says, bhungte, when you eat, is there kaschit niyata? Is there any rule to eating? Kvachit, in any situation, is there a rule to eating that you have to do to ensure that your appetite is fulfilled? Let me make this clear. There are some rules for eating. You're supposed to wash your hands and, you know, say a prayer, eat with your right hand, all of this stuff. Fine. Suppose you break those rules. Does your appetite go away? Does your hunger go away? Your hunger goes away. Even if you ignore the rules, the hunger goes away. Turns out that all these rules are really important for the production of adrishtapala, which is why rituals are complicated, because there are lots of details involved in the production of adrishtapala. There are rules and details for the production of adrishtapala, but what are we after with nididhyasana? Drishtapala, an immediate seen result. So just as in the act of eating, even if you ignore all the rules, your hunger is still quelled. In the same way, you can ignore all the rules and nididhyasana will still have its desired effect of removing viparita bhavana. So the rules that would apply in the case of dhyana, in the case of mantra japa, reciting your mantra, or the details that would apply in terms of visualizing a form of the Lord in your mind for meditation, whatever rules and details are there, none of that applies to nididhyasana. The bottom line is nididhyasana does not rely on the accumulation of grace. Nididhyasana produces drishta, which means it's not even a matter of faith or belief. Suppose you don't believe. Suppose you have a splitting headache. I give you some Tylenol. And you say, Swamiji, I don't believe in this. You say, I don't believe in allopathic medicines. I've heard people say this. I don't believe in it. Yeah, okay. I tell you, you know what? You don't have to believe. You just eat these, and it works. You don't have to believe. Why? The pala of the Tylenol, is it drishtapala or adrishtapala? You may not agree with me, but I think homeopathy depends on adrishtapala. That's my opinion. You don't have to agree with me. Which means if you don't believe in it, it doesn't work. That's the implication. As I said, you don't have to believe. You don't have to agree with me. But the point is, you don't have to believe in Tylenol because it creates drishtapala. In the same way, you don't have to believe in the efficacy of Nididhyasana. You use it, it works. Not a matter of faith. All right. And then we'll finish off the subject matter with one more verse. Verse 1:17. Chudeva drishta badha krita. Chudeva drishta badha krita. Viparita cha bhavana. Viparita cha bhavana. Jaya kena pyupayena. Jaya kena pyupayena. Nasyatra nushtite kramaha. Nasyatra nushtite kramaha. Kshuda eva. You have to break the words apart. Kshuda eva. Drishtabada krit viparita bhavana. How is it that drishtapala, the immediate effect of Nididhyasana, can remove viparita bhavana? Why? The problem is an immediate experiential problem in your mind. Unlike the absence of Lord Vishnu before you, the absence of Lord Vishnu before you, if we call that a problem, suppose we say it's a problem, Lord Vishnu has not appeared before me, then what do I have to do? Accumulate more grace. Suppose I have viparita bhavana. Is a problem. Do I have to accumulate grace to get rid of it? Absolutely not. So he says here, viparita bhavana, we've been talking about that the whole class. What about it? It is drishta badha krit. It creates an immediately experienced affliction. Badha means affliction. Drishta, immediate seen, experienced. So viparita bhavana creates an immediately experienced affliction. What is the immediately experienced affliction? Suppose my head is pounding. If I don't have viparita bhavana, there's no problem. Why? The head is pounding and I'm okay. Right? I'm Satchidananda. My nature is unchanging consciousness. How is unchanging consciousness affected by a pounding head, headache? Not at all. But suppose I do have viparita bhavana. If I have viparita bhavana, then that pounding headache becomes my headache, my pain, my discomfort. So the affliction caused by viparita bhavana is immediately experienced. That's what that adjective means. Drishta badha krit. Viparita bhavana immediately, viparita bhavana creates an immediately experienced affliction. And what should you do? If you have a headache, if you have a headache, should you take aspirin? Should you take Tylenol? Should you take Advil? Should you take, you know, all these other preparations, whatever they are? Which one should you take? Whichever one works for you. Right? Is there a rule that says you can only take this one? There's no rule. What, very pragmatic, whatever works to get rid of the headache, take that one. That's what it says here. If you have viparita bhavana, whatever it takes to remove that viparita bhavana, any form of contemplation, whatever form of contemplation is helpful in removing viparita bhavana, do that. He says here that viparita bhavana is jaya. It is overcome. How is it overcome? Kenapi upayena. Kenapi, by whatever, upayena, by whatever means. By whatever means are available, any means that work. Of course, means here does specifically suggest nididhyasana, but there are many ways to contemplate. So if you say, how should I contemplate? What does Vidyaranya reply? You contemplate in any way that addresses your problem. So if your problem is identifying with the head when you have a headache, then what is the solution? And very seriously, the solution would be, while your head is throbbing, to contemplate the fact that the throbbing belongs to your head and your consciousness is unchanging and therefore utterly unaffected by the throbbing. That's an example of a specific contemplation for a specific problem. And that's what viparita bhavana is. I'm sorry, that's what nididhyasana is. We gave these two general categories of viparita bhavana, but within those two general categories, you can probably come up with hundreds or thousands of specific examples. So I just gave the example of the headache. Well, what about a backache? What about a toothache? Etc., etc. So depending on the problem, you should do nididhyasana to address that particular problem. How about the world? The world is threatening. What is threatening? Suppose you're afraid of thunderstorms. Some people are afraid of thunderstorms. Then what should you do? In the midst of a thunderstorm, contemplate the fact that whatever is happening, even if lightning strikes your home, how does that affect consciousness? Suppose you're afraid of being run over by a truck. What should you do? Look at a truck and contemplate, seriously. This is what Vidyaranya is not talking about trucks and lightning, but he's saying, kenapi upayena, by whatever means is appropriate, you should perform that particular contemplation to address a particular problem. And finally, he says, na asti atra anushtatehi kramaha. There is no, na anushtatehi kramaha. There are no rules for this practice. How rare it is that you hear somebody say that. There's no krama. Krama, order, but order here in a sense of rules. There's no rules. Atra here, in this anushtatehi, in this anushtana, in this practice, there are no rules, which means it really is true. Have you ever seen a book on nididhyasana? A scripture on nididhyasana? Why is that so? If nididhyasana is so important, why don't we have lots of scriptures and books about nididhyasana? Well, you have to have as many kinds of nididhyasana as you have problems. We can have hundreds and thousands of kinds of wrong perceptions, hundreds and thousands of different kinds of viparita bhavana. So how can you fit all of that into a book? So that's his point here. His point here is there are no rules like that for nididhyasana. You use whatever technique is required, not technique. Whatever is the nature of the problem, you perform a contemplation to address that problem in particular. I'll give a few more examples. Suppose you're really attached to a loved one. And if a loved one falls sick, you get shaky. Viparita bhavana, right? So you should contemplate on your loved one and contemplate on you being okay no matter what happens to your loved one. Suppose it's a child. Then you should contemplate on the child. Suppose it's a problem at work. Then you should contemplate on the problem at work. If it's a problem with your body, you contemplate. Suppose it's a problem with your emotions. You contemplate on the emotions. Whatever is the nature of the problem, you choose to contemplate on that very problem. And when I say contemplate on that very problem, what it means is to see in contemplation, to see that you are absolutely unaffected by that problem. That's what we mean by nididhyasana. To see that truth, to reflect on that truth. Remember the example of the lion looking into the pond. To see that truth again and again, to remove whatever is your imagined problem. Now let me just, I wanted to bring up this distinction between jnana and jnanapala. Jnana, we said, means knowledge, but we defined it as the immediate, direct discovery of your true nature as Satchidananda. That's jnana. This jnana dardhya or jnana nishta this is not a synonym, but it's an observation. It is an example of jnana pala, the fruits of that knowledge. And here, the fruits of that knowledge, let's be very clear here. Big picture. Preparation is for whom? Does Atma need to be prepared? Okay. Body, mind, senses need to be prepared. Jnanam is for whom? Does Atma need knowledge? No. Jnanapala is for whom? Not for Atma. For the mind, right? Jnana dardhya, firmness of knowledge. Firmness of knowledge can only be for your mind, right? Firmness of knowledge can only be for your mind, which means jnana pala takes place in your mind. The fruits of knowledge take place in your mind. And how will you enjoy the fruits of knowledge as a result of shravana, manana, and especially nididhyasana? So what that means is the practice of nididhyasana is for the sake of jnana pala. It's for the sake of enjoying the fruits of these teachings. What is the fruits? Inner freedom, absence of fear, absence of a sense of incompleteness or sadness, or absence of any kind of suffering is the result of viparita bhavana. If you stop with jnanam and fail to engage in these practices for the sake of jnana dardhya or jnana pala, you can understand the meaning of the Mahavakya, you can discover your true nature as Satchidananda Atma, but if all these habitual problems are continuing in your mind, how will you enjoy the fruits of that teaching, of that discovery? So just to make that distinction one last time, the end of the last class, I gave you the alternate story. I gave you the lion story in great detail. We'll end our class today with a short version of that lottery ticket example. Remember that one? You have $1 million lottery ticket. You just found out your lottery ticket is worth $1 million. And it's in your drawer. You wake up in the morning, the next morning. So today you find out you are the owner of $1 million lottery ticket. It's in your drawer. You go to bed. You wake up in the morning. When you wake up in the morning, do you feel like a millionaire? You don't feel like a millionaire. That's called viparita bhavana. you are a millionaire. By the way, do you know you're a millionaire? What? If I asked you, do you know you have a $1 million lottery ticket in your drawer? What will you say? Yes, I discovered that yesterday. So look at the metaphor. You have jnanam, you know, in your desk drawer is a $1 million lottery ticket, but you wake up in the morning, and because of viparita bhavana, you don't feel like a millionaire. So what should you do? You should go to your desk drawer, open up, get that ticket, look at the numbers and compare it to the whatever the official guide. You should do that. And then, of course, the next morning you wake up, you still won't feel like a millionaire. What should you do? Get the ticket out again. Every morning. You should go and eventually you're going to cash it and get the $1 million. That's not the story, though. That's not the metaphor. The metaphor is, if you don't feel like a millionaire, that represents viparita bhavana. So what to do to get rid of that viparita? Notice, you have the jnanam, you don't have the pala. Okay? The pala is feeling like a millionaire. If you're a millionaire and you don't feel like it, what's the point? So you have the jnanam, you don't have the pala. In the same way, you know you are Sachidananda, but you don't feel like it. What good is it? Nididhyasana is crucial. Nididhyasana is for the sake of that jnana pala. Okay, we'll continue next week. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor mahamritangamaya. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om tatsa. Before you go, let me remind you that Friday, of course, is New Year's Day. We have a wonderful celebration here planned for the morning. 11 o'clock, we'll do a simple puja and some chanting. I'll have a nice message to start the new year. And, of course, you stay back and we'll have prasad together. Please plan on joining us Friday at 11 o'clock for New Year's Day program. It'd be nice to start the new year together. Hope to see you then. Good night. Namaste.